It's evening and Gladys Radek is in the parking lot of her hotel in Smithers. She's walked over 300 kilometers to get here from Prince Rupert, where her niece disappeared in 2005.
I'm glad it's over, and I'm thrilled and honored that the commissioners are here for the family.
As we talk, she's called from across the parking lot, and a smile breaks out across her face.
I've been looking for you too.
She embraces two other women who are here for the national inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. They've also lost their families here along the Highway of Tears. Radek hands the woman t-shirts she's had printed. Marlene Jack can hardly believe what she's holding.
Oh my God.
Each shirt has a photograph and names of the woman's missing family members.
This is my sister Doreen, Ryan, 4 years old, Russell.
Jack's family went missing from Prince George in 1989. She says she didn't feel like she had a voice until she found support from Radek and other women who she now talks to almost every day on Facebook.
And we're all wacky.
Testimony begins today and runs through Thursday. Andrew Criata, CBC News, Smithers.
We now know the constraints, the limitations, and we can plan accordingly. We're ready to move on. We've adapted to the government requirements. We've planned accordingly, as I've already stated, and we're moving on. We have our hearings starting next week in Smithers. We're back on the road again.
That is Marion Bueller, Chief Commissioner of the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls, speaking to CBC last week. And as she said, that inquiry is back on the road again today. The first and so far only community hearings scheduled for BC are set to begin in Smithers. And it's a significant location. Smithers is in between Prince George and Prince Rupert on Highway 16, a stretch of road famously known as the Highway of Tears due to the number of women and girls who have disappeared or been killed. The CBC's Andrew Criata is covering this week's hearings, and he joins us from Smithers this morning. Hi, Andrew.
Hello, good morning.
In that clip from Chief Commissioner Marion Bueller, she was talking about the government's constraints and requirements and the need for the commission to adapt. What's going on there?
Well, as our listeners have likely heard, it hasn't been smooth sailing for this commission so far. It's on a tight timeline. A preliminary report is due November 1st, and a final report is due at the end of next year. And so far, it's been plagued by delays. There have been high-profile resignations. Community hearings that were supposed to happen this summer have been delayed until later this year. And there have been questions about whether the commission will be able to accomplish anything at all. But as you heard, Bueller sees today's hearings as a sign the process is back on track, and she is ready to move forward.
Okay, so what's happening today, Andrew?
Today and through Thursday is what's called a community hearing. Community hearings are what's being called the heart of the entire commission. We will hear testimony from the people directly impacted by violence against Indigenous women and girls, survivors of violence, family members and friends of women and girls who've gone missing or been murdered. This is different from what's called the institutional hearings. Those the commission will be hearing from key organizations and officials such as police and child welfare agencies and academics. So those might be more of a traditional hearing process, whereas this week is more focused on simply allowing people to speak. This is a place for stories to be heard. There won't be cross-examination. Everyone's going to be sitting in a semicircle to signify their equality, and there are going to be cultural ceremonies from the local community to open and close the proceedings.
Any idea who you will be hearing from?
I have talked to some family members planning to testify today. One is Vivian Tom. She's chief of the Wet'suwet'en First Nation in Burns Lake, but she's also the mother of a young woman named Destiny Tom, who was found dead and badly beaten in 2013. Chief Tom told me how hard this experience was, and a warning here to our listeners that this clip does describe violence and is disturbing.
She was beaten so bad that I guess her spine, right around her neck, had actually just separated because she was kicked or hit so hard that her spine detached, and we saw her just laying there on the ground under the yellow tarp, and it just broke my heart to see her like that. And knowing that she was all alone when she passed away, it really hurt me so much that I couldn't say my goodbyes to her. I couldn't let her know, you know, how much I loved her.
And Chief Tom told me that after that, she felt so lost, her thoughts started to turn to suicide. But she knew she had to move forward because she was now the caretaker for her granddaughter, Destiny's daughter, who was just 3 years old at the time. And we hear about intergenerational trauma. But speaking to Chief Tom, I really got a sense of what that can mean on a personal level, because while her daughter's death sent Chief Tom into depression, it also had a disturbing effect on her young granddaughter. And again, a warning for our listeners.
She found out about teenagers attempting suicide in the community, and she associated suicide with death. And so she wanted to commit suicide because she wanted to be with her mom so bad.
How did Chief Tom deal with this, Andrew?
She said she talked to her granddaughter and told her how her mom fought for every breath she had, and that that's what she should do. She should live life, fight for life. She also got her connected with therapy, and she says today her granddaughter wants to be an RCMP officer so she can grow up to help people. To make all of this even harder, the person charged in Destiny's death was the granddaughter's father, who last year pled guilty to and was sentenced for manslaughter. But Chief Tom told me all of this has led her to a message of forgiveness, and that's the message she wants to share at this week's hearings, how she forgave the man who killed her daughter and why that's important for future generations.
Being able to forgive instead of reacting in violence, because if I reacted in violence, it would be just the same thing. It was violence that killed my daughter. I don't put him down or anything. I don't call him down because that's her dad. And when she grows up, I don't want it to affect her self-worth as a person, as a human being. See, if we hated him, it would really affect her because that's her dad and that's a part of her.
It's a profound story, and that's just one of many we'll be hearing this week.
Yeah, indeed, Andrew. And we don't have much time here, but you talked at the beginning of how the commission has run into delays. What are people saying about this?
I talked to Carrier Secondary Tribal Council Chief Terry Teejee, who lost two family members. He said he's worried this will be more of what's already happened. Testimony will be given, recommendations put into place. But the key thing is whether those recommendations are followed up on, or if they're implemented. Remember, here in BC, we had the Highway of Tears Symposium way back in 2006, and It's just this year that we started to see some of those recommendations in form of the buses. We had the Missing Women Commission of the Inquiry into the Killings of Robert Picton. Still, Teejee said he thinks it's important for families to be at the table to try and make the process work, which is also the view of Gladys Raddick. Her niece went missing from Prince Rupert in 2005, and since then, she's been a vocal advocate for families like hers. She walked across Canada to pressure the government to hold an inquiry, and yesterday she completed what she said will be her final walk from Prince Rupert to Smithers in order to testify this week. Here's what she said about this process and her testimony.
There's so many different issues that you need to deal with in this, like from poverty to racism to, you know, you can't unravel genocide in 2 years. And, I really want to talk to them about solution. There's got to be a solution in there somewhere. We need these commissioners to hear directly from the families about what happened to their loved ones, and we need to try and work out with them that there's a better solution.
And Raddick says that this week she'll be sharing not just her story, but she'll be sharing some recommendations from past inquiries. She'll also be asking for more time. She doesn't think that this process has been given enough time. I should add that the commissioners have said that they're looking at asking for a 1 to 2 year extension on this process. But this week, the focus is just on hearing those stories from these families.
Well, Andrew, thanks for listening to those stories with us and for us. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Andrew Crietta, our CBC reporter in Smithers. More ahead on the news.
The hearings are being held in the traditional territory of the Wet'suwet'en, and members of the nation are taking a lead role in the proceedings.
This water carries strength. This water carries medicine. This water is very much alive and a part of our territory.
Following an elder's prayer, Molly Wickham performed the Wet'suwet'en Woman's Water Song to open the hearings and urged those testifying to draw on the land for strength. Outside, a tent protects a sacred fire, and anyone who wishes to be centered can take part in a cleanse, standing on cedar and stone between two drummers. Inside, the testimony has been emotional.
I said, Destiny, I'm so sorry.
Vivian Tom told the commission about her fragile emotional state following the death of her daughter Destiny in 2013.
I'm so sorry that you were all alone when this happened.
Tom testified she had feelings of suicide, and so did her granddaughter, Destiny's daughter, who was just 3 at the time. She also spoke about the need for counseling, about bullying and cycles of violence. It's part of the approach to the community hearings for the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls. Testimonies are contextualized with cultural and family histories, stories of residential schools, foster care, and sexual assault. The first person to speak to the commission was Vicky Hill. She held an eagle's feather, which she occasionally tapped against her microphone as she shared the story of her mother, Mary Jane Hill, found dead in 1978 when Vicky was just 6 months old. Mary Jane Hill's body was found outside Prince Rupert along what would come to be known as the Highway of Tears. But Mary Jane Hill is not included in the official list of victims in the RCMP task force created to investigate the highway because her death doesn't meet the criteria of foul play, police say. A coroner's report said the cause of death was bronchitis and bronchopneumonia, although it was also called manslaughter, and her body was found nude outside the city. How does that make you feel? Hill was asked. Angry, she replied. She spoke of growing up in foster care, of her struggles with substance abuse, of her attempts to find answers about her mother's death, which she believes was a homicide. What does it mean to not have your mother? She was asked. She gave me life. She gave me birth. Now I have to live without her, was the reply. Locals in purple t-shirts are on hand to offer emotional support and counseling. Tissue containing tears from the hearings will be burned in the fire tonight, and testimony begins again tomorrow. Andrew Criata, CBC News, Smithers.
Can we go now to Smithers, where you're listening to us at 87.5 FM, and it's day 2 of the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls Inquiry there. People from across northern BC are gathered to share stories of losing friends and family members. An important aspect of these community hearings are the cultural and healing ceremonies that accompany them, led by members of the Wet'suwet'en First Nation.
This water is carries strength. This water carries medicine. This water is very much alive and a part of our territory. And this water can help to support us through this time. And we have a very strong connection as women to water, as the blood that flows through our veins brings life. The blood that flows through our territories brings life as well. And it can also bring healing. So just as a reminder, to lean into the land during these days, to lean into the territory and the ancestors that walk with us. So this is the Wet'suwet'en Women's Water Song.
I want to acknowledge everyone that's in this room in a purple shirt. They are our local trauma therapists, counselors, cultural supports, and health supports. So they can raise their hand, but if you take a look around, maybe turn around, and you can see their faces, but if on the back of their shirt, if I can get someone to turn around, it clearly identifies health support. So if you have a question, if you would like to sit and have some tea and chat or sit by the fire, if you're not feeling well, please reach out to one of these wonderful supports in the purple shirts, and they would be happy to address the needs that you have.
No, we just finished the drum cleanse, and the cedar from the birthplace of the Wet'suwet'en, Dee's Clay, and the stones are collected from along the Skeena, from Prince Rupert to Wet'suwet'en Quay, Bulkley River, all the way the lakes to Prince Rupert. Yeah. Our grandfathers are stones. They bring lots of healing. They're our oldest ancestors. And they're here as helpers. We want our people to know that they're walking along the Skeena, Bulkley rivers, along the lakes, along the territories of our people. So we brought these medicines in to help ground people and know they're here to help. We bring medicines in here and we just go around and check on people to make sure everyone's okay, they're present, and that they know there's lots of helpers here to walk with them. We always start off with a Wet'suwet'en welcome and a Wet'suwet'en honoring of the territory and our people. And then we were welcoming everyone here to share and support each other and share the love of of this important matter of our Indigenous women and girls.
Some sounds from the National Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls Inquiry, currently holding sessions in Smithers. Those run through today and tomorrow. It's 25 minutes now after 7 o'clock. Today is the final day of community hearings in Smithers for the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls. Yesterday, the youngest group of speakers shared their stories. High school students from the Kitsum Kalum First Nation near Terrace took the day off school to perform their song, The Highway, about BC's Highway of Tears. Afterward, they spoke to Commissioner Michelle Odette.
On a reserve called Kitsilis. I want to speak as a student, as an individual, and as a young Indigenous woman about an ongoing problem for many people in BC. We all know someone who is affected by this highway, and we are also very tired of our women and our men going missing and murdered along this highway. The fact that it is mainly Indigenous women is quite scary, since my own community and school sits directly on this highway. My friends here, they all walk home a short distance along this highway, and it doesn't take long for something nasty to happen. I've lost a few family members to this highway. Their names are Lana Derrick and Rebecca Gnu. I've lost both before I even got to know them, and to hear this is heartbreaking. To know that I've lost family and my family is still grieving truly does break my heart. No one should ever have to leave this world like this. This highway is a main transportation for many people, and we need to find solutions for transportation from town to town. Our government has been talking about getting transportation along this highway of tears for years now, and it has still not happened. A simple bus going from a town to the next can easily help this issue, and maybe some of our women will hop onto the bus instead of a stranger's car. Like I said, hitchhiking is the main transportation for some people. My older sisters used to hitchhike from Kispiox, where my family lives, to Terrace, where we also have family. Knowing that you have a loved one being transported by a stranger on a highway, let alone the Highway of Tears, is quite scary. As an Indigenous woman, I think that we need to stand strong together for what we believe in. And we believe in that one day we will get the attention and the support we need to decrease the amount of our women and sisters going missing and murdered. The Highway of Tears is a major problem here in BC, and it needs to end now.
Alors, merci beaucoup. Thank you. Thank you so much. And your moms, your grandmothers, your aunties demanded this inquiry, and many women across Canada, family members, even fathers, grandfathers, and men demanded this inquiry. 40 years ago, I was young, you were still in the sky when that happened. And we have it today. We have it, and speak out, speak up, tell the truth. Because we have that mandate to gather, to collect that truth. My last question or favor, would you do us the honor that each time that we do a hearing across Canada, can we start our meetings and event and gathering with your video?
That was amazing. I knew that we'd reach some type of like attention, but I didn't think we'd be going like this big. So I am feeling very proud of what we've all accomplished.
That's grade 12 student Melanie McDames of the Kitsum Kalem First Nation. Video of that performance on our Facebook page, facebook.com/daybreaknews. It's time now for the Daybreak News with Betsy Trumpener.
This is CBC News. Today is the final day of community hearings for the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls here in BC. Families of the victims have been calling for the inquiry for years, but as Andrew Crietta reports from Smithers, not everyone finds it easy to share their tragic personal story in such a public setting.
Marlene Jack overcame her fear of flying to get from Vancouver to Smithers to testify at the inquiry. But when she landed on Monday, she still wasn't sure if she'd be able to speak.
I don't know. I might be able to speak. I might not be able, depending on, I don't know.
On the first day of the hearings, she was anxious to see how things would work.
I'm so nervous. Like, where do you sit? I don't know. We'll see. Tomorrow, everything comes out about my sister.
In the end, she was able to speak about how her older sister Doreen protected her, about their time in residential school, about her belief Doreen was raped as a teenager. She laughed about the time Doreen raced their uncle from Burns Lake to Prince George, winning after he got a speeding ticket. She also testified about how Doreen, along with her husband and two children, disappeared from Prince George in 1989. Later, she decompressed in the parking lot.
I feel a lot of relief. The adrenaline is coming out now, so I'm glad that it's out.
Testimony is scheduled to resume shortly after 9 this morning. Andrew Curietta, CBC News, Smithers.
You're listening to Daybreak in Smithers, 97.5 FM, and it's up to the next generation to help change Canada for the better. That was one of the messages delivered at the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's hearings in Smithers yesterday. It was said as high school students from the local Buckley Valley Christian School sat to witness testimony. What they heard was the story of Sherry Murdoch, whose mother disappeared from Vancouver in 1997, her DNA later found on serial killer Robert Picton's farm. And afterwards, the students spoke to CBC about how the testimony affected them.
My name is Josephina Kindrat. I'm in grade 11.
Shannon Stewart, grade 11.
Joseph Kindrat, grade 11.
What did you think about what you heard this morning?
It was really powerful, and it was really cool to be in the room, and so felt so real listening to her story and all her emotion too.
I was really sad just because I can kind of connect with it on a personal level, and I just loved how she made us feel the pain, not to like get the point across, just to like, you know, so we can sympathize with her, and it was a really great experience.
How did it connect with you on a personal level?
Well, I'm adopted. And I lost my mom when I was way too young to like know her or anything. So I like there's just something that's kind of missing. So like she felt that something was missing. So I kind of like understood what she meant.
Can I ask how much did any of you like know about these stories? I mean, you live in Smithers, so I don't know like how much do you hear about the Highway of Tears and that sort of thing?
Before I moved into town, I lived on a house right beside it where they have all the crosses lined up against the road and they have the big billboard. So every day I would come out and I would see it, and I'd look it up. People would tell the stories.
I hear a lot about it, just kind of gossip, I guess, but I know the stories get changed a lot from the family's point of view, and I didn't realize there was so much more, like it was much more deeper than you hear on the streets.
For me personally, I don't really hear about it because, I mean, it's like 2017. Some of us, a lot of kids nowadays are so busy in their like own little Instagram or Snapchat space that you don't really listen to anything that's like said to you by people. So like this was kind of like the first like experience that I've really like had about it.
So different levels for all of you. Are you told like don't go hitchhiking?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. Our neighbors across the street were like, if you're walking, make sure you're walking in a group, make sure you have your phones, don't go just don't walk alone, don't go.
So they said in there, sort of like, you're the next generation, you're the ones who are going to help change things. How do you feel about that aspect of things?
For me, like, if I have children, I'm going to let them know from, like, a younger age, like, maybe not too young, so it's not, like, too hard on them, but maybe around 10 years old or something, I'm going to tell them, I'm going to make them aware that the world isn't a perfect place and there's discrimination and there's going to be people that just, you know, that there's been a problem and that they can tell other people, their friends, other adults, that something needs to change and that we need to be more aware and we need to help each other.
When she said that we're the next generation, it's kind of a big thing to stomach, that you're going to be the change that everyone's going to see in the world. But it's also a good thing. Like, I'd love to help out to bring more awareness to it, because I think the reason is people don't talk about it enough, or some people just don't care enough to listen, and that they really do need to talk about it and listen. Yeah,
I think the message that I get a lot from people is that they're just doing this to get attention a lot of the time, and just to use people for the money and the government to help them, like, get free college and whatnot. And yeah, I think this kind of awareness to bring to the future generation would be good, that it's not all for attention at all. It's just for you to understand where they're coming from.
Some students from Bulkley Valley Christian School in Smithers, they watched testimony at the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls. That inquiry wrapped its community hearings in Smithers yesterday. Community hearings finish for the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls. Hereditary Chief Namox of the Wet'suwet'en First Nation had this message for the commissioners.
When you leave here, we don't want you to forget what you heard. We don't want you to make a report, put it away, and dust it off when it comes handy for you to use. You keep the words of the families in your hearts and in your minds. You carry it with you. There are recommendations that the family has given to you. You need to follow through with that. We are hereditary chiefs, my fellow Denizé Tsakazé. We're going to watch you. This is the first one in British Columbia. We're not letting you off easy, because we are not let off easy.
Hereditary Chief Namox of the Wet'suwet'en First Nation. One of the key questions about this commission has been, what will it accomplish? The commissioner said it was too early to hint at what their final recommendations might be, but the CBC's Andrew Criata was in Smithers. He asked some of the families and witnesses who testified for their thoughts, starting with Sherry Murdoch, who spoke about losing her mother at a young age, and how, as a youth care worker, she sees the need for more stable support for both children and adults.
A lot of kids in care or at all, just when they're 19, they get kicked out of wherever they're living, their foster home sometimes. And it's just, you know, they don't know how to function. You know, it's not helpful. And, you know, a lot of the times it leads to the streets, and that leads to addictions, and that leads to prostitution. And, like, the whole treatment thing is so hard. Like, my friend tried to get into treatment, and they wanted her to do blood tests, and she had to see a counselor, and she had to do counseling sessions before. And if somebody from, let's say, downtown Eastside wanted to do that, do you think they'd really go through all that work to go into a treatment program and to provide education, and so they understand their addiction and they don't just think it's a problem, that really it stems from their, you know, what happened to them? The thing is, there's still racism, and it just doesn't help. And really, that's just bringing down people's self-esteem, which also relates to drug use and sexual exploitation. And, like, even me, I could have easily been in that lifestyle, but I chose something else because I had my grandmother to tell me what to do, and who cares what people say, and, you know?
Do you hold much hope that this, you've heard it from the elders and from the grandmothers and the chiefs, like, we've done this before, don't let this be another one that sits on the shelf. What do you?
Yeah, well, I did the one in with the
Opal Inquiry?
Yes, the Opal Inquiry. I went for that. I went at the beginning and at the end. They say there is stuff going on.
How are you doing?
But I haven't seen it yet. And I've read about all the other things that they said they were going to do before, and I haven't seen it personally, so I don't really know. But I'm hopeful that if enough people hear this story and they understand what an inquiry is, what it's about, what it's for, and they understand it, especially from my point of view, because I am young, I hope that a lot of younger people are like, oh, if she understands it, then we can understand it. And so I just hope that it's more like people understand what's going on.
My name is Lucy Smith. My hereditary name is Smokestrom. I'm from Burns Lake, BC. I belong to the Grouse clan. I lost my sister in 1984-85, and we didn't find her until 1986. And I also lost my niece in the Picton farm. And the process that we've gone through is very hard, and the changes I'd like to have done is to have the victim's family informed and what is going to happen, what is happening, and what's going to happen, and have like a liaison worker that understands what the police process is and understand what the protocols of our native culture is, and to work together like that. A lot of people aren't educated as far as police protocol and things like that. We don't know what to expect, what is expected of us. We feel like we don't have the right to ask questions because we're scared we're gonna get in trouble. That's how I felt back then.
Hey, my name is Florence Nozell. I'm from Morristown. I think there's a lot more hope for our people and the families that were affected by missing women. Before, they talked about all this, but things were going like pretty slow. But now, after the inquiry is here, and I have more hope. I have more hope.
And what is it about it that has given you more hope?
Because all our stories are out there now, and more people are aware of what's going on. Like, a lot of stories weren't out there, and now it is. Yes, things will change. I have hope.
We're from Vancouver, downtown Eastside Women's Center.
And what do you think needs to change?
Well, you hear me breathing like that? That's it coming out. What I like to change is society. Society has to see. Society has to listen. When I was out and about, and then I come up on somebody on the bus or on the street, and, you know, I just simply go like, hey, how you doing? Hey, you know, how was your day? Are you okay? You know, something like that. And they step back. They go, oh, you want something? What do you want? You know, they don't want to look at you. They don't even want to talk to you. They see me as a native person, strike one, native, and I want something, you know, because I'm saying hi to you. Next question I might be asking is, do you have a dollar, do you have a quarter, whatever. That is such stigmatization.
Do you feel good about the process? Do you feel like something will change because of this?
It's no might. It's going to. I don't like putting those words of might is, but it's going to.
That was Margie Humchett speaking with the CBC's Andrew Criata. Before that, Florence Nazeel, Lucy Smith, and Sherry Murdoch all were at the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Inquiry in Smithers this week. All had lost family members to violence. You can read more about their recommendations and what comes next in the process on our website, cbc.ca/bc.